the night sky in August 2008, except for the last few days, virtually having never seen the sky in July, I do hope August will be a little bit better. And of course, the evenings are drawing in a bit now, and so you don't have to wait up quite so late. And the first obvious thing that one will see, I'll come to in the highlights very shortly. There's a lovely region of sky that includes Cygnus, Aquila and Lyra. They have three bright stars. Deneb, the brightest star of Cygnus the Swan, Altair, the brightest star of Aquila the Eagle, and Vega, the brightest star of Lyra. Together they make up what's called the Summer Triangle. And at this moment, Vega is virtually overhead at about 10 o'clock at night. If you look at it with binoculars, you should see, just up to the left, perhaps depending how you're looking, a pair of stars. It's Epsilon Lyrae, and is also called the Double-Double, because with binoculars you actually see that there are two stars there, but with a telescope under good conditions, each of those then is seen to be a double itself. And I had a most wonderful view of that just a couple of days ago, testing a telescope under what were virtually perfect seeing conditions. So that's quite a nice thing to look for. A little bit lower down, between two lower stars in Vega, is what is called the Ring Nebula. And this is what is called a planetary nebula. At the heart is a white dwarf star, the remnant of a star like our Sun that exploded and blew off much of its material, that forms a sort of a donut, a ring, that you see in principle around the white dwarf. And that can be picked up quite easily. However, the white dwarf itself is not at all easy to see. I've only ever seen it once, and that was under perfect conditions using a 16-inch telescope. So it is a nice thing to look at, though, with a small telescope. And as I've said before, if you follow the line from Altair up towards Vega with a pair of binoculars, you'll see a rather nice asterism. It's called Brocky's Cluster or the Coat Hanger, because it looks like an upside-down coat hanger. Over to the northwest is, in fact, the constellation of Ursa Major, and that has a lot of lovely objects to see within it. If you care to put night sky into Google and find our Jodrell Bank night sky page, you'll find links to details about all of the objects you can see in these very, very attractive constellations. Well, let's go to the planets. Most of those I'm going to cover in the highlights in just a minute or so, but let me just say something about those that you can't actually see. Mars is now so close to the Sun that it's virtually lost in the Sun's glare after sunset. I don't really think there's much chance of seeing that, and we're going to have to wait a few months before it could be seen in what is called the pre-dawn sky, just before sunrise. So that's not really a good time for Mars. Venus, we're going to come back to later. It's actually starting the month really quite close to the Sun in angle, 14 degrees. It gradually moves away, but still at rather low elevation. And there is a nice time to look for it, as we'll come to. So that's a couple of the ones that we don't see very well. Let's look at the ones that we can see. And if anybody has looked towards the southeast after sunset, you couldn't fail to spot Jupiter. It's pretty well at its best this year, but sadly, because it's at the very lowest part of the ecliptic in the constellation of Sagittarius, its elevation is never more than about 16 degrees, and that means that the atmosphere does affect it, and so the image quality you see with a small telescope will tend not to be good. This will depend upon what is called the seeing. That is the amount of turbulence in the atmosphere. And the other night, in fact, the seeing was absolutely superb. So I did get some quite good views of Jupiter with a 5-inch telescope. You still see some colour. One limb at the top, let's say, is red, the other is blue. I say let's say because it's depending on the telescope which way up it looks. And that's because the refraction in the atmosphere sort of splits Jupiter up into different images at different colours, and they're at different elevations. One thing to do to get a clearer image is to use, let's say, a green filter, which limits the range of wavelengths that you're observing it with, and you do get a better image, as I observed the other night. So that's one possible thing to do. It does actually look really very bright, and I think you can hardly fail to spot it. And even binoculars, if you hold them steady, will show the four little moons, the Galilean moons of Jupiter, as they weave their way around it. On the 15th of August, if clear, it would be well worth looking towards the horizon to the west just after the sun has set. Perhaps because it's summertime, it'll be a bit north of west. Because Venus, which during the month has been gradually moving away from the sun, will have just passed Saturn and Mercury in the sky. And they're within about 2.5 degrees of them. Saturn and Mercury very close together, Saturn slightly higher in the sky than Mercury, and Venus 2.5 degrees to the upper left. Because Venus is quite bright, you should be able to pick it out with binoculars, even in the glare of the sun, because it's just after sunset, and that might well enable you to spot Saturn and Mercury. And that will probably be the last chance you have of seeing Saturn until it comes round in a few months' time. So that's one little evening skyscape I think well worth looking at. I've already talked about Jupiter, and that's certainly a highlight of the month, but in fact we have three more highlights. And the first of these is on the very, very first of August. There's a total eclipse of the sun. Now, as sometimes happens, if you have an eclipse of the sun at new moon, the following, or sometimes the preceding, full moon will coincide with an eclipse of the moon. So 2 weeks later, on Saturday, August the 16th, we will in fact have a partial lunar eclipse. It actually happens just after sunset. So as the moon rises at about 8:30 in the evening, it will just begin to enter what is called the umbral shadow of the Earth. As time goes by 22:11, that's British summer time, 80% of the moon will lie within the Earth's full shadow. And that will appear quite dark and hopefully perhaps a deep red colour. The upper part of the moon, which will only be in the penumbra, not the full shadow, will appear quite brilliant in comparison. Because the moon's elevation is going to be quite low, perhaps 15 to 20 degrees, in fact, the Earth's atmosphere will add to the reddening. So it really could be quite spectacular. And I would say, you know, do have a go and have a look if, hopefully, it might be clear. So the evening of Saturday the 16th, after sunset, through till about 8:30, and 10 to start properly, and then 10, 11, just after 10 o'clock in the evening, you'll get the best effect, gradually, obviously, reducing until about 11:44, when it comes out of the Earth's penumbra. How red and how colourful the moon looks depends upon the amount of dust in the Earth's atmosphere. If you've had a volcano recently, and there's a lot of dust in the atmosphere, it can be very, very dull and just a dull grey colour. We haven't really had one, a volcano that is, for a while, so the atmosphere should be pretty clear, and the colour really may be very, very nice indeed. Well, finally, August, between about the 11th and the 13th, gives us a chance to view the Perseid meteor shower. That's one of the most dependable that we have during the year. Now, depending upon the phase of the moon, it can be better or worse to observe. And sadly, as you've just seen, we're at full moon on the 16th, so the moon is waxing. Now, that means it does set before sunrise, and we do tend to see meteors best in the hours after midnight. So probably start looking for it at around the 11th of August, and that's a few days before full moon, and observe them, hopefully, as late as possible in the early morning. And a little chart shows you where to observe, essentially up to the east, looking towards the constellation of Perseids. They're called the Perseids because the radiant of the meteor shower is in the constellation of Perseids. Now, it's not that you should look directly at Perseus. It's much better to look at about 45 degrees away, up towards the zenith. That's where you'll see the faintest meteors. And obviously, if you look directly at Persis, the meteors are coming towards you. You don't see much of a trail. If you look 45 to 60 degrees away from Persis, then you'll see the arcs across the sky. So let's hope around the 11th, 12th, particularly before the moon gets too prominent, you'll have a chance to see the Perseid meteor shower. So it's really quite a good month. But let me just finish with one other thing. There have been one or two clear nights in the last week, and I've been out observing. And on three occasions, I have seen the International Space Station. In fact, just a couple of nights ago, it was really at quite high elevation. And I must say, I've been quite amazed how bright it has appeared. They have added another solar panel array recently, but I've looked on the web and I've seen nothing about the fact that the brightness should have increased significantly. But all I can say is it is really very, very bright. If you go to the website, there's a link that will tell you when you have a chance to see it from your location. And I would say go and have a look, because it's by far the brightest object in the sky. It used to be about the same brightness as Venus. I would say it is at least twice, if not more times, brighter now. So well worth having a look for the International Space Station. Have a good month.